huge moments of change and the people who find themselves right in the middle of it. People like Prime Minister of Britain, Theresa May. But a story for our time may be found in the political legacy of the almost forgotten Clement Attlee. Attlee, in 1945, upset the apple cart and dumped national hero Winston Churchill by running a campaign that favored a new kind of patriotism that prided domestic improvements over protracted foreign entanglements. Clement Attlee of the Labour Party was to preside over the greatest realignment in British political history. Forgotten today, it was Attlee who voters in 1945 favored as a solution to internal turmoil to deal with the costs of the World War and the loss of the greatest empire in the world.
5 years of war inflicted great damage on our country. Valuable lives were lost. Much wealth was destroyed. Our trade was disrupted. Clearly, there would be hardships and shortages of many things to be endured. To achieve recovery would require a great effort on the part of all the men and women of Britain.
That's Attlee speaking in a televised interview in 1950. John Bew is professor at King's College in London and author of Clement Attlee, the man who made modern Britain. He says modern Britain was formed during Attlee's tenure as prime minister from 1945 to 1951, which included a winding down of the British Empire and a ramping up of social and economic reforms.
Churchill was esteemed and regarded as the great hero of British history, but he still loses the election that follows immediately in the wake of the Second World War. And the reason for that is democracy at its finest. The British people could distinguish between the man who'd steered them through war, through their darkest hour and their finest hour, and also the programme they wanted to remake the world anew. You know, many great promises had been made to the British people, like they would have a new health service, like they would have a new attitude to international affairs. And basically, they took the decision emphatically in 1945 that Churchill was not the man to deliver upon the peace. And that did not mean they didn't love him, but they were able to distinguish between Churchill and his party. And they decided that the Labour Party was more of the spirit of the times, would more likely deliver the things they really cared about.
What's interesting, as you're talking about it there, is that the Brits really understood that as significant as World War II was, it was time to get around to dealing with this set of domestic problems, that it was overdue, and that Churchill was just someone from a kind of Victorian dream, and he wasn't going to be the person to do it.
Well, the thing about Attlee is he's kind of a vessel for the ideas of the time. He's not a particularly profound thinker. And for that reason, I think he's been underestimated, or to borrow a phrase from George W. Bush, he's been misunderestimated. So he hasn't really been understood and he hasn't really been looked at. He's seen as a kind of a quiet man, a chairman who ushers in the spirit of the age. Now, my view is actually his heart beat faster than that, and he was more deeply patriotic. He'd served in the First World War, and the thing that drove him on, really, and he saw this firsthand, was that he felt his former comrades, those who died in the First World War, had been betrayed in the 20s and the 30s. And so in that sense, the Labour Party, which Attlee represented for longer than any other figure, for 20 years from 1935 to 1955, really was the kind of success story of the first half of the 20th century. It had only been founded in the first decades of the 20th century. But really, it was an attempt to bring Britain kicking and screaming out of the Victorian age into a better sense, a better balance between wealth and poor, between the working classes and the upper classes, a more equal society. And there was a massive appetite for that in 20th century Britain. And it wasn't simply a socialist appetite or an attitude of left and right. What drove Attlee on and what Churchill also admired and appreciated was patriotism. It was just a slightly different conception of patriotism, one that was invested less in the empire, but instead focused more on domestic glories, the strength of industry, solidarity and the comradeship that people had seen in the war. And as I say, there was a massive appetite for that in 1945, and Attlee was the man, and it was Attlee's government who ushered in that new era.
So what are we to make of Brexit, thinking about these distinctions that really characterize what happened in Britain after World War II? What do you think?
Brexit is a complex thing, and people always ask me when I'm going around the UK talking about the Attlee book, what Attlee would make of it. And the honest answer is I'm not sure. So on the one hand, he was a believer in cooperation with Europe. All post-war Britons actually are real believers in better cooperation with Europe. They do not want to see a war again, so there's nothing anti-Europe about this. But at the same time, they believe, when it comes to economic integration and legal and political integration, that perhaps the European Union, and I'm sure Attlee and Churchill would have agreed on this, goes too far in terms of integration. Britain wants to retain its free hand, wants to retain its different economic system. So there are incongruities and there are tensions there. I think actually the post-war generation would have thought that, you know, as much cooperation with Europe as possible would be a fantastic thing. They would have applauded the EU and all its achievements, particularly keeping peace in Europe alongside NATO, which has been also been very important. But at a certain point, they would have balked at the idea of ever closer union, which was kind of built into the European project, and thought there comes a stage where we don't want to be too attached, where we want to retain what Churchill called the long continuity of our institutions without pooling it into some sort of federal project. So I think, you know, the British attitude to Europe, you know, if you can take the national pulse as opposed to all the different opinions about it, is quite consistent. It's one of constructive engagement, one that does not want to distance itself from Europe. So many Britons are tied up to European business. So many Britons holiday abroad in Europe. There's still 1.5 million expats spattered around the continent as well. People want to preserve all that, but they want to draw a line at ever closer integration and political union. And one reason for that is, you know, emotionally, linguistically, culturally, economically, we're as tied to the United States as we are to Europe as well. So it's always better for Britain to be the kind of bridge in between these worlds rather than lumping itself too much into one or the other.
Finally, the subtitle of your book is The Man Who Made Modern Britain. And just looking at it at face value, it seems very complimentary. I mean, the man who made modern Britain. But it's also a nuanced way of saying the man who gently woke Britain up from its empire dreams and made it really confront the reality of the 20th century. That's a different kind of legacy, but it seems to me that's really what Clement Attlee did.
I couldn't agree more. You've expressed it beautifully. Attlee would have laughed at the idea that he was somehow a greater figure than Churchill. He loved Churchill. He knew Churchill was a bigger speaker, a bigger historical figure. And yet the point of that title is to say the Britain we live in today over here is actually is more than Churchill's creation, is Attlee's creation. And the things that his government did shape Britain more than ever before. You know, first of all, he ended the British Empire essentially and transformed it into a Commonwealth. Not overnight, but he started that process. He introduced the National Health Service, which is the most prized political possession in British life today. He changed the whole structure of the economy. NATO, the UN, the independent nuclear deterrent, all these things happened on Attlee's watch, even if the work was started by Churchill as well. So that's really the essence of the title. I don't want to overclaim for Attlee. I criticize him at a lot of points in the book, but I do think he is an epic, hugely significant historical figure and should be more well-known in the United States as well.
John Bew is a professor at King's College London and author of Clement Attlee, The Man Who Made Modern Britain. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.